It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
That is so funny. Carl Rove finishing it up. Hey, guys, Carly Shimkus is going to be here in about 35 minutes, but I hope you're there now. 1-866-408-7669. A lot going on. We'll look to cover it all. It's just kind of amazing. I'm looking at President Biden today. I'm looking at what the House is doing today. I'm looking at Veterans Affairs. I'm thinking to myself, okay, they got to work. Well, it's all about politics. President Biden, a keynote speech at the United We Stand Summit to counter the corrosive effects of hate-fueled violence, all about his speech last week. And now, House Oversight Committee, fueling the climate crisis. Hey, let's talk about the green energy plan that we passed last month. House Veterans Committee, of course, they're going to talk about veterans issues, right? No, access to full spectrum of medical care for women, reproductive health care, all about abortion. Let's just say all of Congress is about the midterms now. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Setting the table for the midterm elections, we have some new Fox News polls out tonight. Voters are extremely concerned about inflation at 59%. The state of democracy at 50%. You see abortion ticking up there, but at 45%, and crime at 43%.
Yeah, there you go. Primary complete. The matchups are set. Latest on the races, which will decide the party in power in Washington, and the issues which will define the races.
Number two.
With Governor DeSantis actually delivering them to Martha's Vineyard, we're going to see a whole new awareness on a sanctuary state where all of a sudden this open border kind of mentality is coming home to roost.
Mark Meadows weighing in. Border crisis. It has been a horrific reality show for Arizona and Texas, and now they're sharing it with all 50 states. Plane loads of illegals just landed in Martha's Vineyard. Bus loads are being dropped off at the VP residence all morning. And when will the president realize this is all his fault?
Number one.
Now we're choosing to build a better America. An America that's confronting the climate crisis, with America's workers leading the way. We're rebuilding an economy, a clean energy economy.
Exactly. Let's do that. Energy and the economy. While President brags about his climate bill and demos electric cars, our economy is being driven off a cliff. How will this affect you? And here's what I'm talking about. Climate agenda, great. We don't have the infrastructure. We wrote the checks a year ago. Almost nothing's been done. So the president didn't handle the regulation and the permitting process. Number two, of course, you want to plug in your car. We'd all love to do that. Save some money on gas, right? Well, we should also know, if you care about the climate, coal fuels most of these power plants. If we really cared, we'd have nuclear. If we cared about the environment, we would use natural gas. But it's almost about this green religion. And yesterday, the president's over in Detroit, Michigan, where thousands of people will be out of jobs because we're shifting their jobs overseas. And we need less workers for the electric engine. Cut one.
Now we're choosing to build a better America. An America that's confronting the climate crisis, with America's workers leading the way. And we're rebuilding an economy, a clean energy economy, and we're doing it from the bottom up and the middle out. I'm so tired of trickle down, I can't stand it.
Right. Trickle down. Those successful people who hire other people, that's the way it usually works. You can say whatever you want. By the way, that's a buzz term in the 90s. Get over it. I know that's when you were just 15 years into your job as a senator and probably two presidential runs, none of which worked, in case you forgot. President Biden yesterday taking a bow, but 5,000 workers will eventually lose their job. And because of supply chain issues, more and more dealerships, even though they're starting to get them trickling in now, don't even have the cars. None of them are fully equipped as they try to get them off their lots, the ones that do arrive. So the president of the United States cares about our carbon footprint. If you care about your carbon footprint, why is he waiting to the last minute to vote, hops on Marine One, and then to Air Force One to go over to Delaware in order to vote, stops by his house and comes back? What kind of footprint is that? And how much does that cost? Here's some people weighing in on the hypocrisy of the green movement, from Leonardo DiCaprio and Senator and former Secretary of State Kerry, hopping on their private jets, but we all have to sacrifice. Listen to Tommy Tuberville, the senator, Gary Palmer, the congressman, and we lead with Nancy Mace from South Carolina. Cut four.
Number one, it sounds pretty terrible for the environment to fly a short distance to go vote. But secondly, he's been pushing mail-in ballots for the last 2 years, and now he's going to go vote in person. Seems a little hypocritical.
Well, the only thoughts I got is, who paid for that? Does he pay for it? I pay for it when I go vote. I think everybody else does. I read $177,000 because they forgot to absentee vote. That's not a very good example for anybody.
Well, I'm surprised he didn't try to vote by proxy. That's how the Democrats do it. So I do think it's a massive waste of taxpayer money. I think it's another sign of how Democrats will politicize everything, because it's all about the show and not about actually participating in an election.
Right. Kamala Harris actually be going up to Buffalo to talk about climate change. What's she doing there? Taking a plane. I mean, can anyone just be aware of it and say that this is really my religion and I don't really want to go up there by plane? I'm going to zoom in to save it. And you could actually tell people that. She tweeted out this morning, I'm heading to Buffalo, New York, to highlight how we are taking climate change thanks to the Inflation Reduction Act. When are you going to start doing it? You've had it out there for almost a year. Stephen Miller tweeted right back to her and goes, you flying? Yeah, you're flying. Real quick, on the state of the economy, the president's not getting great marks on that. In terms of his competence, a Fox News poll is out. Only 38% of the country says he's competent. Considering that it's about 45% of the country is Democrat, that's not strong. 52% now say he is not competent. In September, it was 51-45 saying he was. So the more he does the job, the less people are convinced that he can do the job. Jason Furman, he's the National Economic Advisor and Council Director for President Obama. He looked at this situation right now. Cut five.
One of the biggest levers the Fed has is raising mortgage rates. When they raise their interest rates, and when they're expected to raise their interest rates, mortgage rates go up. That's why mortgage rates have gone up so much this year. That's cooling the housing sector. That is unfortunately good news for the economy as a whole, because it helps bring down inflation, but it can be tough for households too.
Listen, inflation was at 9%. It's down to 8.3%. It means in food prices, 16%. It goes across the board depending on where you are. People are feeling that. And anything you could do to lessen that is the story, but it's usually combined. If you look, if past success can yield future success, it's combined with tax cuts and spending cuts. Neither one of those things are happening. So we'll talk about that later. I don't want to do it all now. In fact, I can take your calls, 1-866-408-7669. I don't know if you've been watching Fox and Friends, but this morning we watched, or last night during Tucker, we watched my illegal immigrants being flown in from Florida to Martha's Vineyard, the home of Barack Obama and so many rich of the rich, so many celebrities there who love their lifestyle. Well, time to feel like El Paso just a little bit, the Rio Grande Valley to perhaps maybe Tucson, Arizona, which they've been living with that reality with 5,000 to 7,000 a day. You just got 60. So now deal with that. Make that part of the conversation. Have local news cover that, since most of the national news outside us ignores it. What I thought is the best move ever, that has more people texting me with a smile on their face saying they love that the woman who told us over the weekend that the border is secure, we have sent buses of illegal immigrants into Washington, D.C., but instead of going to Union Station, they went to the vice president's residence. I absolutely love it. Remember, she said this over the weekend, cut 13.
The border is secure, but we also have a broken immigration system. We have a secure border in that that is a priority for any nation, including ours and our administration. But there are still a lot of problems that we are trying to fix, given the deterioration that happened over the last 4 years.
Don't make it up. Deterioration. It was called a massive push to secure the border, get Mexico to put 20,000 on their southern border, make all illegal immigrants, especially single males, wait in Mexico as we process their asylum application, and then rush them through the judge situation and make sure they're expelled immediately if they don't get through. Meanwhile, Lori Lightfoot's complaining a few hundred have gotten to Chicago. She's sending some of them into the suburbs. For the most part, this is an in-your-face until you address it. But does it solve the problem? I thought Carrie Lake was quite impressive last night. She's got the Republican nomination and got all the support of President Trump. She was on with Tucker and just talking about this movement. This story broke while she was on with Tucker. And here's her response to Governor DeSantis flying illegals into Martha's Vineyard. Cut 16.
You know, I get a kick out of it watching these liberal mayors just, you know, throw their hands up and say we can't handle it because it's life every day for us in these border states. However, I'm not a fan of it, Tucker. I mean, we're just taking people here illegally who shouldn't be here. We're moving them further inland. My plan is the most bold, aggressive plan on the border. We're going to secure the border. We're going to call it what it is, issue a declaration of invasion on day one, get troops on the border in the form of our National Guard. We're going to stop people from coming over. And we're going to stop the cartels from having control of our border.
Yeah, that sounds great to me. It sounds not anti-Hispanic, not anti-immigrant, just a control of the immigration system. We can't do the easy reforms that we all agree on unless we seal the border and know who are here. Now, I told you about the matchups make fights, matchups make Senate races. Lieutenant Governor Fetterman wants to be a Senator Fetterman. Going against Dr. Oz has about a 3 or 4 point lead, according to the latest poll. The problem is he had a stroke and he talks like that. We don't know if he's healthy. Wish him the best, but should you have someone? If I got a stroke and you couldn't understand me, I have the best management, but I could not work this job. They'd say, Brian, we'll get you the best therapy. You got great health coverage, but you can't do the job. That's a fact. So the question is, no, you have a big heart. But can John Fetterman do the job? He looks in awful shape. He does not speak well. He's agreed to one debate with closed captioning. I guess he can't even understand people that well. You just wonder, can he do the job? Here's Fetterman, cut 21.
I truly hope for each and every one of you. You didn't have a doctor in your life making fun of it, making light of it. Are telling you that you're not fit to be served. No? But unfortunately, I do.
Right. Be served. Maybe you're not. He didn't bring it up. I think he's been very tasteful. If you look at some of the tweets and social media attacks, he's been holding his fire compared to what he would be saying. And the only thing he did say is he's watched you mock some of his shoots that he had in order to beat Dave McCormick and get the nomination. Fetterman and Oz would be a great matchup. Warnock and Herschel Walker is a great matchup. And what is turning into a great matchup is Lee Zeldin against the interim governor, Hochul. Cut 27.
People feel like their safety is under attack, their wallets, their freedom, quality of their kids' education. And they believe that if they go down to places like Texas or Florida and some of these other places, that their money will go further, they will feel safer, they will live life freer. That's why New York leads the entire nation in population loss. Now, we're seeing a debate in Illinois and these other places about whether or not they should have cashless bail and get more DAs into power who refuse to enforce the law. Well, in New York, we actually have this. We have the pro-criminal laws already passed. We're seeing the consequences of it. We have the DAs like Alvin Bragg refusing to do his job. We even have some lax judges refusing to do theirs while law enforcement is getting entirely thrown under the bus.
Yeah, no question. Lee Zeldin has to talk crime, has to talk quickly and distinctly about the taxes and talk about the services and putting the criminal last instead of first. So criminal justice reform, I get it. 30 years for selling pot, not good, not accurate. But letting people out in a revolving door of justice is not going to be effective. And that will resonate with people in my humble view. When we come back, I'll talk more about this as well as what's happening at the border. And expand on energy and the economy and go over some more matchups because it's going to make it exciting, a real sprint in the next 50-plus days. If anybody tells you they know how it's going to come out, they are not telling you the truth. You are listening to Brian Kilmeade. That's the truth.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick the Show as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform and watch directly on outkick.com/watch.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I have never denied that I lost. I don't live in the governor's mansion. I would have noticed. And there's this clip that's going around, and it shows me saying that we won. And what I was referring to was that we won in terms of communities that were long left out of the electoral process,
right,
finally participated in 18 at outstanding numbers.
Right.
But I'm not delusional, so just so that's clear.
Right. She went on to say a bunch of stats that have since been nixed. They talked about cleaning off the payrolls, not to get rid of black people, Hispanic people, or women that she claims. That is Stacey Abrams, of course, still complaining about the 2018 election and getting a pass from The View. Big shocker. And she comes out and says, well, these people wiped off the payrolls. They hadn't voted in decades. They probably have moved. They did not respond when asked, do they still live there? So they were wiped out and they were cleansed. It was a rule that was put together in 1997 by Democrats at the time, desperate to take the state. You'll see. Stacey Abrams will do everything she wants, and she will lose to Brian Kemp. And then once and for all, people realize, as smart and talented and speaker as she is, her message is not good. The victimhood is not right. I watched her speak to law enforcement. She is not into cops at all. At all. And on a separate note, different seat, but Herschel Walker is. That's why I believe he's going to beat Warnock, and there'll be a huge upset. People want to put down Herschel Walker, too, in Georgia. Nice try. But meanwhile, election integrity is a big thing because of what President Trump and how he felt and still complaining as of yesterday about the election results, which he was unable to prove. I don't care if he's 100% right. He's unable to prove it. His court cases fell flat, all except one. So now, and he also says Mike Pence destroyed his own political career by not throwing out all the electors and declaring President Trump the president still, which is not smart to even say that. But when you talk about election integrity, why don't people bring up Stacey Abrams ever? Tucker Carlson thought about that last night. Cut 30.
Daily, the media remind us that anyone who has questions about the outcome of the last election isn't a disgruntled voter. That person's a criminal. That person has embraced the big lie. You see it in every news story. The big lie. For years after the 2000 election, Democrats claimed that George W. Bush was not the legitimate president. Some still say it. They may believe it. And then in 2016, the entire Democratic Party rejected the outcome of the presidential election. A foreign power got Donald Trump elected. Democrats said that, and they continue to say it every single day of Donald Trump's term. They impeached him over it. They hamstrung the executive branch of the U.S. government with an investigation into Russian influence that in the end turned up nothing. What would you call that? You would call that election denial. You would call that the big lie. But no one was punished for it.
And that's it. You can his whole premise last night was you can question it and not go to jail. You can question it. Hillary Clinton did. Stacey Abrams got her own election in particular. Constantly, John Lewis. Hundreds of Democrats have come out at various times and said he's not a legitimate president. I'm not going through the inaugural. And they weren't put in jail. No one grabbed their phones. And I know a lot has to do with because it happened on January 6th. None of this stuff would have happened without January 6th. And Trump did the worst. But all these other people did questions elections for dating back to Bush Gore. Even though Al Gore was magnanimous, his followers weren't. When we come back, Corey Shimkus joins us. We open up the phones. Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Earlier this month, I announced a $52 million grant for the American Rescue Plan. That's a partnership right here in Detroit, including the big three, United Auto Workers, to train workers and upgrade factories for electric vehicle revolution. For example, just like they used to be building carburetors, you aren't going to be doing that much anymore with electric vehicles. But we're going to have to build an awful lot of vehicle batteries.
Right, and have the Chinese do it because we don't have any of the rare earth, and we don't know where to throw them out. We don't know how long they last either. Welcome back, everyone. This is Brian Kilmeade Show. Carly Shimkus is finding that out for the first time. She is co-host of Fox and Friends First, so that means she's been up since 2 a.m. Yes, and earlier?
Yeah, I get up at like 12:30.
Wow, yeah. And you go to bed at?
I try and get to bed by 6:30.
But 6:30?
Yeah.
When do you eat dinner?
Right before bed. Is that bad? Some people say you shouldn't eat right before
5
bed.
O'clock you're eating.
Yeah, 5:30.
And is this going to be a problem in the future?
Sometimes I live on the edge. I push it to 7.
That's it.
If I want to watch all of Brett Baer's show.
Wow. The Brett Baer is your late night show. You have no idea who Greg Gutfeld is.
So I DVR Brett's show sometimes so I can finish it.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I DVR.
Is this riveting?
Yeah,
this
is.
My schedule is so
Carly
sad.
Shimkus is here. But
it's worth it.
But Carly, this is unbelievable. I thought that Jesse did a great job last night chronicling where the money is for the infrastructure bill because it's been signed and sealed and delivered for a year. They've got heated sidewalks in Wisconsin, and there's one other small plant built. Nothing's been done. I mean, if you got to pass some type of regulation reform along with this, you got to be calling up, what's going on here? Why is this not built? Where are the power stations? You got to be a leader.
Yeah.
If that's what you
want.
Well,
here's the thing about the infrastructure bill. So I made it very clear that I missed Jesse's show last night because I was snoozing. Mm. But I'm sure he brought up the infrastructure bill because President Biden was in Detroit at the car show and he announced $900 million for electric vehicle chargers. Like, that's really what we need right now.
Exactly.
Like, that's the kind of thing that people are like, especially with the inflation report that just came out. And we saw how high food and gas and everything else is. That's really what they're hankering for. But I think a lot of people actually had to remind themselves, like, oh, that's right. The infrastructure bill did pass because it has been so long. And now he's finally starting to roll it out. I guess, Brian, you could say it's sort of a good thing that this money isn't being spent right now, though, because that would every single time he announces a new tranche of money that's getting put into the system, it does increase inflation.
Right. And these are inflated dollars. So maybe. But I don't think it's a good thing if you're in a big rush to jam electric cars down our throats. You got to build it. The other thing is Tesla, just an example of private industry. They didn't say – I know that they are some of their innovation, their R&D, definitely financed by the government. I got it. They're eligible for grants. Mm-hmm. But what they do is they built their own systems. So I'm not saying they're incompatible. I don't know enough about it. But when you see those Tesla systems, it's clearly a Tesla charging system. So does Ford have that? Where's the Ford fire system? Where's the GM charging system? And they were saying that about 5,000 auto workers will lose their jobs as they morph into this electric engine.
That's exactly what caught my ear when you played that that clip of President Biden saying, we're not going to be making carburetors anymore. And it reminded me of when he canceled the Keystone XL pipeline. And then all of these pipeline workers that were relying on that two-year job were all of a sudden out of employment. And then the president and John Kerry went on TV and said, don't worry, every time I think of electric vehicles or green energy, I think of jobs because all these people can get jobs making solar panels. I mean, how insulting is that for people who have spent years and years of their time and energy and money investing in the equipment that goes along with being a pipeliner to just have somebody say, oh, you can just transfer your career? That's awful. But it's their line.
It's like someone in our business saying, oh, there's no more radio jobs, go to TV.
Yeah.
No one can do both.
It's like telling a sideline reporter to put on the pads.
Right.
And play football.
Go play football.
Exactly.
I like that analogy almost as good as mine.
Thank you.
Almost. Not as good, but it just shows you're trying for a change. Because a lot of times you phone in your segments. Here's Kevin McCarthy last night on how he messaged what you just said. Cut 7.
Don't you miss the days when the market was high and inflation and gas prices were low? It's the opposite. It's exactly what they have done. They opened our border. They brought inflation with runaway spending. You watch what they've done to our schools. There's no one being held accountable. You've got looking to OPEC to solve our problems instead of America being energy independent right here.
So the question is, you know, if the House does flip and it should, the question is how many Senate seats will, and it's going to be really interesting.
I know.
I mean, fascinating.
Yeah.
I know. It also pointed out, I'm not sure the significance of this, John Fetterman's got this, you know, why does he wear a hoodie? Evidently, he's got this, like, huge thing in the back of his neck. It's like looks like a life preserver.
Really?
Yeah.
And I think a health thing?
You were asleep. But Tucker... I'm not sure. It's not good for you.
I was already on Dream 2.
Yes.
Let's be clear.
I mean, we're talking about 8 o'clock.
I catch Tucker in the morning after I watch the end of Brett Baer's show. I turn on my phone, and that's when his replay is on.
Oh, that's when his replay is on? Mm-hmm. Shannon Bream used to be a big benefit when her show used to repeat because it's very newsy, a lot of sound bites.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
I just thought I'd share that with you.
Yeah, we love Shannon.
Right. She's all right. I mean, would she? Do you know who's going to get her show?
She's a perfect person. I don't. If I did,
who do you think?
I never thought about it.
Really?
I think it should be a rotating panel of anybody who wants
who's
it
free?
should get a turn.
Oh.
You like
communism? Just like everyone should do it?
You know what's funny about that comment?
We all should anchor a show?
So when I was dating my husband, my dad, we went out to dinner with my dad, who is the best. And he goes, you know, my boyfriend at the time was like a little nervous to meet him, as any guy would be. And we were at a seafood place. My dad's really into seafood, really likes oysters. And my husband is from Memphis, not really the oyster capital of the world. And so my dad was like, oh, go try an oyster. And my husband's like, oh, no, it's not really for me. And he goes, what are you, a communist? It's like ultimate insult.
And
he slurped one down.
Right. Well, right. But he's not a communist.
Oh, no. He, to be clear, my husband is not a communist. No,
right.
Yes.
Just want to make that. Because you never know. Mediaite could be listening. In terms of communism, Senator John Kennedy feels as though this president is spinning us into oblivion. Cut 9.
The president, he's not really forgiving student debt. Somebody's got to pay for it. He's just transferring it from the people who owe it, the college elite, to the people who don't owe it, working class Americans. But the way the president has handled the economy, his social and economic policies, how can I put this? Your aunt's Facebook page has more credibility with the American people than President Biden does when it comes to the economy.
You got to wonder, and is he like Yogi?
I love him.
Is he like Yogi Berra with his stuff? Like, you wonder where this comes from.
I know. Do you think that he thinks about it in advance? I mean, he's just a soundbite machine. But he's right about the student loan stuff. I mean, that is something that the president passed and then has never talked about it since.
Yeah.
And it's because he just angered
everybody. Joke.
And it's also such a bad idea. I mean, for obvious reasons that have already been discussed, but Democrats hated it. A lot of people thought it was too little. That's crazy. And then everybody else is like, are you joking me? This is insane and so unfair to literally everybody outside of college educated people that are going to get white collar jobs and can ultimately pay off their student loans if they, you know, finance and budget in an appropriate way.
What do we have in common?
We work for Fox.
Okay, what else?
We live on the East Coast. We're in this room together.
Okay, these are all good,
we
accurate.
We like food.
And we also love foreign policy.
Yes.
Like when this war starts, we like diving into it.
Yeah.
No one's reporting this. You know Vladimir Putin and President Xi are meeting to discuss the Ukraine war. It's not going well.
Yes.
And we know this. Vladimir Putin's limousine was hit by a loud bang, a possible attack. According to an anti-Kremlin sources who've been revealing health scares.
When?
They say Putin's limousine was allegedly hit by a loud bang on the left side of the wheel, according to General SVR Telegram channel. That's a telegram is how they communicate over there through the war.
Yeah.
The car drove safely unharmed, but Putin's there's been multiple arrests from his own security service. They claim they separate posts that Putin ordered. On a separate post, there's something else. But the security, he was in a decoy caravan, and the fact that a loud bang hit the left side of his car, he feels as though someone and his own crew was an inside job. I mean, think about this.
Wait, a loud bang, like possibly a gunshot?
Possibly.
Wait, did this happen in Uzbekistan? Because that's where he is right now.
No, it happened in Russia. So that we do not know what's going on with this, but the president's head bodyguard and several other people have been suspended or are in custody, claimed the Telegram channel without naming anyone.
You don't want to be them.
There's been a narrow circle of people who knew about his movement of the president and his posse, and all of them were from the president's private security service.
Wow. He also lives in a total bubble. I mean, you see the videos of him where he's on one end of this massively long table and the closest person is like at the other side. He has a food tester, and doesn't he have health issues? That was like a huge story, especially at the start of the Ukraine war. He was shaking. There's something some people were saying that he possibly could have cancer, but nobody could verify these things because he is who he is. And then, speaking of death threats, at the beginning of the war too, all of these people who were trying to go after Vladimir Zelensky and his life was being threatened.
Yeah.
He's I mean, now he's doing media, and he's able to, you know, be more.
He went to the front lines the other day. I mean, think about this: almost 3,000 square miles have been taken back by the Ukrainians. Dozens of towns have been reclaimed, and then you wonder if they could move. We're worried about Odessa in the south. Now they have to worry about holding Kherson in the south.
So tell us, Brett, because I know that you follow this very closely. Why are they now? Why were they so successful in regaining this territory?
Well, number one, they had to reorganize. Number two, we're absolutely helping them with tactics. Yes. Number three, we're giving them the HIMARS. It's pushed the Russians back. We were blowing up a lot of their depots. And fundamentally, Ukrainians are fighting for their sovereignty, and the Russians have no idea why they're there. And they don't know.
And that's always been the case.
Yeah. And the thing is, in layman's terms, Pete Hegseth would try it differently. We have captains and lieutenants who have been given permission to run battles on the ground and make decisions and report back after they make them. They are run by generals, some of which were just put there for ceremonial positions. Next thing you know, they're in a real war. That's why there's almost 20 have been killed.
Yeah.
So now they're in this battle. They got to make quick decisions. Everyone's like, I'm not making these decisions. And I quit. Take off my uniform, and they're running, dressing like Ukrainians and running away.
Yeah. I just wonder if this is a quick change of tide, or if this is a long-lasting thing, and then how do you end this war? What's the ultimate of this? It's been going on for, 7 months now?
Right. I mean, they're going to end it when they have to. And the thing
Russia is.
And that they started this week owning about a fifth of the country. That's less. And then you wonder, if you get behind enemy lines and you start blowing things up behind enemy lines, like those 9 planes that magically blew up in Crimea. So they were describing it to me yesterday. There's a huge line to get out of Crimea now. It's a resort town. Mm-hmm. Everyone's like, oh, we got Crimea. So everybody wants to be there. It's the jewel of the Black Sea.
Yeah.
And now they're like, nothing's safe. We're leaving. So what's the point of having it if you're Russia? You can't even say it's a jewel anymore.
Exactly.
And that's what Vladimir Putin was saying.
And then Putin, you started with talking about Putin and Xi Jinping meeting in Uzbekistan. This is the first time, by the way, since Xi Jinping has left China since
the
start of the pandemic. Yeah. So what's going to happen in that meeting? Well, one of their goals is to figure out a new world order. Like, that's not, you know, Austin Powers scary stuff. Like, are you serious? And then, you know, Russia is losing this war right now. Obviously, Putin's going to try and get weapons and military support from China. And you just have to wonder, I mean, under the table, maybe he's already helping Putin. You don't know. But if he starts to more obviously and overtly help Russia, I mean, what do we do? Secondary sanctions? And then that affects our economy, which I'm not saying is a good thing or a bad thing, because you have to think about, you know, global and foreign policy.
But it will affect our economy negatively.
But it absolutely will.
But long term, it'll probably help us because we have to divorce ourselves from
it. I know, but when are we going to start? I mean, pharmaceuticals still made in China? Bullets still made in China?
I was reading some of that, but I do say that there's a huge push to get a lot of the manufacturing push from Apple and others into Vietnam and parts of India.
That has to happen, and now.
Right.
Yeah.
I would say this. I've been told that as much as China is allied with Russia, they also realize that they are dependent on the West, and they do not want to be caught in this, especially this tornado of doom that Russia's in right now.
Yeah.
And I hope they learn and say, listen, you think you could take Taiwan? They also want to fight for their sovereignty. They want no part of you. They don't want to be part of communism. They're a thriving little island. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
So you might – and you haven't fought a war since 1979. And by the way, Vietnam did well in repelling the Chinese.
Yeah. I think that China – that Xi Jinping probably sees Russia as sort of the junior partner in this relationship.
Yeah.
And
never used to be that way.
It didn't. But if he helps Putin, Putin's then, you know, sort of dependent, reliant, and that he owes – Xi a favor, and then if they end up winning the war, that strengthens China. So there's sort of in that Ukraine-Russia thing, there's no real loss for China to get subtly involved.
So, Carly Shimkus, thank you for participating in this segment. When we come back, we're going to find out if a woman who goes to bed at 6 o'clock at night and gets up at 1:30 needs to know more.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we got a few minutes here. Carly Shimkus is with us, and we're going to find out if Carly wants to know more.
More to know with Carly Shimkus.
I love this first one. So one of the most powerful tools to improve health, bolster relationships, and just feel better is your smile.
Really?
It's just that simple. So Americans apparently tend to smile more than, and wider than folks in other countries. This article says those megawatt grins are actually good for our mental and physical health. So if you're in your car right now and you're frowning, turn that frown upside down.
Yeah, force yourself. Even if you don't feel it, you could go the other way.
It's a de-stressor. It makes you look your best, and you may make a friend.
Next, Olivia Newton-John's publicist is fuming because she was not mentioned at the Emmys. The guy's name is Michael DiCaprio, publicist for 24 years, said Michael feels the decision was not right given that Olivia's extensive track record in Hollywood, especially on TV, including acting in TV movies, A Mom for Christmas, never heard of it, RuPaul's Drag Race, sadly I did, Murphy Brown is off the air for a while, and Glee. So do you believe that they were wrong not to mention
her? Well, it would be really bad if they didn't mention her at the Oscars. But I would say that she's more of a movie actor than. But I could. I wouldn't blink an eye if they mentioned her at the Emmys as well.
No one would say, what's going on? Mention Olivia Newton-John. Yeah. Next.
All right. Too much blue light from screens makes you grow older faster.
Well, that's not good for me.
Oh, like televisions, laptops, smartphones can accelerate the aging process. Researchers found that light could also lead to onset of obesity. Shall I read on? Excessive exposure to blue light from everyday devices such as TVs, laptops, phones may have detrimental effects on a wide range of cells in our body, from skin to fat cells to sensory neurons.
Wow. Next.
Put your phones down.
Does your dog have an allowance? The average pet owner spends nearly $300 a month on their pet. They surveyed 2,000 pet owners, including 1,000 dog owners, 1,000 cat owners, revealed that half of the respondents have set up a monthly budget for their pets, 53% with an average cap of $308.
I did go to the vet once. I had a hamster, and I spent $200 to keep it alive.
You did
it
not.
It had a wet tail, and it died.
And at that point, did you have a lot of money?
No, actually, I didn't. But you have
died of wet tail?
That's what hamsters die from. Fun fact of the day, that's also a little morbid.
I think some other things kill hamsters.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show, 1-866-408-7669. Coming to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. But there's a lot of things going on in Manhattan. Number one, when I talk about illegal immigration, they're coming here. Thanks to Governor Abbott, fed up because no one's paying attention to Texas or Arizona specifically. And then Congressman Lee Zeldin is doing so much better than anyone thought in his quest to become the next governor of this state. First Republican since Pataki won 3 straight times. And Lee Zeldin's going to be a guest today. Mark Thiessen standing by. Why he believes that when the president of the United States calls out ultra-MAGA, he's really calling out all Republicans. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three. Sponsored by Crunch Fitness. Interested in owning your own business in a growing $30 billion industry? Check out Crunch Fitness at crunch.com.
Number three.
Setting the table for the midterm elections, we have some new Fox News polls out tonight. Voters are extremely concerned about inflation at 59%. The state of democracy at 50%. You see abortion ticking up there, but at 45%, and crime at 43%.
Brett Baer laying out the Fox News poll. The primary is complete. The matchups are set. Latest on the ages and the races, which will be decided, will decide the party in power and the direction of our country. The issues that matter, we'll talk about it.
Number two.
With Governor DeSantis actually delivering them to Martha's Vineyard, we're going to see a whole new awareness on a sanctuary state where all of a sudden this open border kind of mentality is coming home to roost.
There you go. And that, of course, is Mark Meadows. Border crisis has been a horrific reality show for Arizona, Texas, New Mexico, and maybe California. Now it's being spread to all 50 states. It's plane loads of illegals just landed in Martha's Vineyard and busloads dropped off across from Kamala Harris's residence. When will the president realize it starts with him?
Number one.
Now we're choosing to build a better America. An America that's confronting the climate crisis, with America's workers leading the way, and we're rebuilding an economy, a clean energy economy.
Yeah, right. Energy and the economy. While the president brags about his climate bill and demos electric cars, our economy is being driven off a cliff. How this will affect you. And most people, I can't believe it, really believe the president's incompetent. It's an almost a total reversal from where we were a year ago in 2021. There was supposed to be a normal presidency. Normalcy is back. We got is back. Yeah, back to the 70s. With if you consider Jimmy Carter's era is normal. If you look right now at a Fox News poll, question, has the Biden administration been competent and effective in managing the government? 38% said yes. That was at 52%, excuse me, it was at 51% in September of 2021. Now 52% say no, only 40% had said no. 38% of the people thinks he's competent. Let's come in right now with 100% of the people in my studio think he's competent. He is columnist, contributor, Mark Thiessen. Mark, welcome back.
Good to be with you.
Hey, first off, on those numbers, 38% consider him, only 38% consider him competent and effective. So I would say 42% of the country are Democrats. It's pretty bad.
That is pretty bad. And I'll tell you, it all started with Afghanistan. We've sort of forgotten the Afghan withdrawal now, but his numbers and competence and effectiveness were fine until then. And then he presided over this disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan. And then he lied to the American people about it, saying it was an extraordinary success. He lied about the fact that the military commanders didn't recommend leaving Rizan to residual force. He lied about the fact that al-Qaeda wasn't there. And Americans just looked at that and said, this guy is incompetent. And once people decide you're incompetent, it's really, really hard to recover. And so that started the slide. And then and then you piled on the inflation, and you piled on the labor crisis, and you piled on the highest food prices since 1979, and the highest shelter costs since 1984, and the border crisis, and the worst crime wave since the 1990s. And all of it has fed and cascaded into the numbers you're seeing today. But it started, we need to remember, it started with Afghanistan.
Yeah, absolutely. And now this whole thing with the things that have passed. Yeah, the CHIPS bill passed, got some bipartisan support, as did guns and infrastructure. None of it generated from the White House, though. It all generated from the Senate. And in fact, he almost screwed up two of the three.
The gun bill, too. And by the way, if the MAGA Republicans are so irresponsible, how come Republicans work with him on a bipartisan gun legislation? How come Republicans work with him on bipartisan infrastructure? All the things that he's celebrating, other than the Inflation Reduction Act, which is now actually, we now know, is causing inflation, not reducing it. Other than that, and the American Rescue Plan, the things he passed the Democrats, it's all Republicans working together in a bipartisan way. So he can't have it both ways. He can't run around saying MAGA Republicans are obstructing our progress, but then celebrating all the things that Republicans helped him to pass.
Yeah, so I'll bring to your column then, and then we'll move on. You believe it's all Republican. When he says MAGA, and I believe so too, ultra MAGA, MAGA, what are you talking about? If you want to say, I don't like President Trump, all right, there's a lot of people that don't, and Liz Cheney and those companies, I get it, and there's bad size, so I understand it. But when he used the term MAGA, ultra MAGA, it makes you say, what does that stand for? And when you drill down on it, Mark, you agree with a lot of the stuff that make up the what made America great movement.
100%. Look. Here's what he said. Even in that, the Darth Vader speech in front of Independence Hall, bathed in red, he said the MAGA Republicans want to take away a woman's right to choose. So basically, if you're pro-life, you're a MAGA Republican. Well, first of all, 70% of Republicans identify as pro-life. So immediately, his claim that he's not talking about the majority of Republicans falls away. And second of all, the Republican Party has had a pro-life plank in its platform since 1980, when Ronald Reagan was there. Ronald Reagan, every Republican president going since then has been pro-life. Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush, George W. Bush, are they all MAGA Republicans? And then he said that the MAGA Republicans wanted, in his Labor Day speech, MAGA Republicans want to take away your Social Security. Well, first of all, Donald Trump didn't want to take away your Social Security. He pushed back on the Republican Party about entitlement reform. But who was for entitlement reform? Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan. Remember that ad that they showed of Paul Ryan pushing the little old lady in the wheelchair over a cliff? I mean, that's been a Democratic attack on Republicans for decades. And so I guess by his definition, Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan are MAGA Republicans. I mean, and the list goes on of all these issues where he uses this MAGA attack. He's not attacking Donald Trump. He's not attacking Trump supporters. He's attacking all conservatives. That's what it is. It's an assault on conservatism and the conservative movement. If you are one of the 74 million Americans who disagree with his policies and voted for his opponent, you are a threat to democracy. That is what his message is. And it's not me interpreting it. It's him saying it himself.
By the way, yeah, and he considers himself an historic figure who wants to marginalize his opponents. I get it. You want to run for office and do it, but don't make them evil. Don't make them make this something that's got to be arrested or eradicated, because you want to do a you want to put President Trump on the ballot. That's a tactic, but condemning people for believing it is dangerous, and it's dangerous
especially
to the country.
You're going to unite the country.
Oh, yeah, I've given up on that, Mark. But you're right, he did say it. I know.
That was the reason he was elected. It wasn't because anyone disagreed with Trump's policy. Right before the election, October, 53% of Americans, a record high, said they were better off than they were 4 years ago under Trump. They were better off. That was the highest it's ever been in the Gallup poll. So nobody was voting against Donald Trump's policies. They were voting against the chaos. They were voting against that. And his entire campaign was based on, I'm going to return what you said in the opening of this segment. I'm going to return to normalcy. We're going to unite the country. And it, not only has he not done it, he's become everything he condemned and worse.
By the way, just putting together the speech on the speech with the blood red in the background at Independence Hall, evidently Joe Biden wants to go down in history and really believes he is. And the one person who was behind it, I'm stunned by, John Meacham. John Meacham started working on that speech. By the way, isn't it amazing? John Meacham, who I like, he's endorsed a couple of my books, and we've had him in, and his books are fantastic on Andrew Jackson. But he commented on a speech that he wrote. Oh, he helped write the inaugural, and then one of the people that wrote the speech, this John Meacham, who has a long view of history, one would think he's the one who set the tone and tenor of that speech, which is one of the biggest mistakes of his career, correct?
100%. I didn't know that John Meacham had helped write that speech. That's just shameful.
It's in Politico today.
And how can you help write the inaugural address where he said, I'm going to put my whole soul into uniting this country, into bringing Americans together, and then less than 2 years later, write a speech basically declaring 74 million Americans a threat to our country? That's just shameful.
A couple of things. Just the president yesterday basically is making it clear that he's going to be driven by the clean energy religion. It's not even a practical approach right now. It's a religion. Here he is, cut one.
Now we're choosing to build a better America. An America that's confronting the climate crisis, with America's workers leading the way. And we're rebuilding an economy, a clean energy economy, and we're doing it from the bottom up and the middle out. I'm so tired of trickle down, I can't stand it.
What's he even talking about? Trickle down, number one, when people are successful, they hire other people. Is that technically trickle down? Where the CEO and the founder makes more than the people working for them, then they split out into their own companies? I'm pretty sure there's no such thing as what he's discussing. But also, when he comes to this green energy push, does he know how many auto workers are being laid off as he is basically subsidizing this push towards electric cars?
Yeah, so number one, he's in that Labor Day speech, he talked about how the MAGA Republicans are against the working class and for Wall Street. I'm sorry, he's the president who just asked working class Americans to subsidize electric cars for people who can afford Tesla. And this is the president who just asked auto workers to pay for the graduate degrees of doctors, lawyers, and Wall Street executives. Pay their college loans and their graduate school loans. So spare me the Mr. Scranton Joe. He's making Scranton pay for Wall Street's education. And then second of all, the climate stuff, this guy, I mean, the hypocrisy of that event the other day is there's so many levels we could spend an entire broadcast of yours talking about it. But let me just drill down on one. He just talked about how this is the greatest thing for climate change in the history of Congress. And then he left that event and got on Air Force One to fly 100 miles to Delaware to cast a ballot in person, the Mr. Mail-in ballot, Mr. Absentee ballot, you know, anyone who opposes that is a racist, and then flies back emitting tons of carbon into the atmosphere when he was just in Delaware on Saturday and could have taken advantage of early voting. Did, like, the White House not say, hey, Mr. President, what's your plan to vote? They didn't even have that. You know, so he's literally, everybody's, all these climate activists have been, roasting Kylie Jenner and all these celebrities for taking 17-minute flights on their private jets. He just flew Air Force One on a 27-minute flight to Delaware and back to vote.
You know, it also shows me in hearing you say this, it also shows me there's no good body man or scheduler with him. I mean, for the most part, hey, Mr. President, just so you know, early voting, today's early voting. Fill out this ballot, sir. Thank you. I'll fill up the envelope. You know, you and I don't have butlers, but he's got 25. We're interviewing. Yeah, you're right, Mark. I should not have jumped to conclusion. So, I mean, if anybody should know about early voting, it's him. Instead, oh, my goodness, you didn't vote. And now we have people on the lawn. We can't take the chopper. So now we got to put you in 100 SUVs. We got to bring you to Air Force One. Then you got to go to Delaware. Then you got to stop by your house. And then you got to fly back. How is that efficient? And by the way, guess where Kamala Harris is going today to talk about climate change? Buffalo. Can she walk? I don't think so. Is she going on a passenger jet? Not sure. Pretty sure the answer is Air Force Two. So can somebody else, they want everybody else to sacrifice. They want everybody else to pay more money for these cars, find some charging station, and then, of course, they're not going to be affected by it. When it's all perfected, they're out in the real world, and they got drivers and Secret Service anyway. So real quick, on the things that matter most to the midterms, number one, inflation, 59% said that is. 50% said the number one problem is future of democracy. Number three, 45% said abortion. Did Lindsey Graham coming out, making a speech on abortion and saying this help or hurt? Cut 30. I'll ask you. Did it help or hurt when he came out and said he's going to push for legislation to have the life of a baby end at the decision end at 15 weeks?
So I get what Lindsey's trying to do, which is to push back on the Democrats' extremism, because the fact is there was a Harvard Caps poll that showed 72% of Americans support restricting abortion to the first 15 weeks, including 79% of women and 50% of Democrats. So what Lindsey is trying to say is, here's the majoritarian position when it comes to abortion. The problem is that Republicans have been saying, conservatives have been saying for the last five decades, we need to repeal Roe v. Wade and send it back to the states. And so it puts all these candidates who are out there on the campaign trail saying, look, this is a state issue. I hope we elect state legislators to do this. Congress should not be legislating the abortion law, throws them under the bus. So I think it's a huge mistake.
Huge mistake. And it did overwhelm one of the biggest mistakes you could ever make as a president. And that's celebrate a 1,200 point, yeah, Dow Jones drop, inflation at 8.3%. So instead of,
we don't want to talk about abortion, we're talking inflation.
Right. So what do you do if you're Republicans? You can't not talk about it.
So what you do is you say there's that young lady who won the primary in New Hampshire, who was on Fox yesterday, and she handled it exactly right. She said, I believe in the right to life, but I also believe in the Constitution. And the Constitution says this is a state issue, and I think the state should handle it. But the other part of it is we should push back and say, but, you know, if my opponent wants to talk about abortion, here's a simple question for him. What name the restrictions you would put on abortion? Because the American people, the majority of Americans don't believe in abortion on demand up until the moment of birth. And so that's what my opponent believes in. And so they're the extremists. Make them own their abortion extremism and say it's a state issue that should be decided by the state.
Mark Thiessen, I decided that we can't go through the break. I don't have that type of power. So thank you very much for joining me.
Got to pay the bills.
You got it. Mark Thiessen, thanks. When we come back, your thoughts about what Mark said. 1-866-408-7669. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. 1-866-408-7669. Doug, you're listening online in Illinois. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Brian. I was just calling, but you guys are talking about Lindsey Graham, and I thought the Dobbs decision actually made it so it had to go back to the states.
Yes.
Even the people running on codifying Roe
I don't think they can at the federal level. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but I'd love to hear what some of the legal experts really do say. That decision seems as put it back to the states and the states only.
A couple of things. I have heard that it's legally challenged, and we'll have to see who would stay and who would sue for it and, you know, and go from there. But let's forget legal. I was just talking more political. So it's what you bring up and how you bring it up. Crime should be number one thing people talk about. Number two, inflation. And that fits in the whole category of the economy and what you would do different, how you'd go about it. Not just, I'm against crime. No kidding. And at the border, what you would do. And then the question is, when Lindsey Graham stepped forward and does the press conference, it makes everybody talk about that and Democrats revel in it. And that's why I was talking tactics rather than reality. And I don't know if he could even do what he said he was going to do with a Democratic run government. Could you go offer that in the Senate, get it passed, and then bring it up in the House? Would they be looking to do that? So thanks for the call. Listen, when we come back, I'm going to be joined by Congressman Lee Zeldin. This guy is on the move. He's got a legitimate shot of being the first Republican governor since Pataki, who won three straight terms. Can he do it? We will see. Lee Zeldin next.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm not going to mince words here. The governor of Texas is forcing on New York and D.C. and Chicago and potentially other places a needlessly last-minute and complex process that is a heartless display of politics over people. Why not give reasonable notice? Why send these folks only to blue cities or blue states? This is about politics for him.
It is a manufactured crisis by ambush. Any dollar that goes to the state of Texas, every single one of those dollars needs to be committed to cities like Chicago, New York, and Washington, D.C.
Oh, really? Going to go recommit dollars in Texas to those high-tax states like Illinois and New York? Because they get about 7,000 illegals a day and the rest of the country ignores it. All the blue states ignore it. The president ignores it. So they have to take action. And now New York says they're overrun. They're creating these immigrant reception areas where I watched today live and Mayor Adams walking around. I see brand new shirts and sneakers and beds. We're all paying for that because the administration won't crack down on that. Congressman Lee Zeldin joins us now. He is the Republican nominee for governor, and he wants to be the next governor of this state. Congressman, there is a crisis going on right now. I take Mayor Adams at his word that these homeless shelters are already overrun. How would you handle this?
There is a crisis. It's a crisis at our southern border. And these border communities, these border states are desperate. They need to get the attention of President Biden and the Biden administration. They're desperately trying to figure out how to do that, and they don't know what else to do. Now they have started to get the attention of the Democratic Party. And basically, if President Biden and Vice President Harris won't come down to the border, then you have a governor bringing the border to them, forcing them to do their jobs. Now, but here's the other issue, though. On top of the federal government falling on their faces, that you have state and local governments turning into sanctuary states, sanctuary cities. We see that in New York. In New York City, they wanted to give non-citizens the right to vote. Fortunately, a court just overturned that. That would have been over 800,000 people. What you see in the New York state budget year after year is they keep coming up with new goodies, new rewards, incentives that they dangle out for people who are deciding whether or not to come into our country, where they realize that if they come in and they go to New York, that they find sanctuary and a whole lot of money, that hardworking, law-abiding New Yorkers who pay a lot in taxes and are already struggling to make ends meet, they're the ones who are going to have to bear that burden. So when you hear Democrats talking about free housing, free education, free health care, free money on top of it, free phones, whatever is in that goodie bag, it's time for us to come to this reality right now that while the federal government needs to finish construction of the border wall, support our Customs and Border Patrol agents, end catch and release, enforce the Remain in Mexico policy, and that they need to stop incentivizing and rewarding this illegal entry, what right. we also need is for places like the state of New York to also stop incentivizing and rewarding illegal entry and to call on this president and this administration to do their job. There's a lot that the state can be doing that it's not doing. It's actually making things worse, not better right now.
I want you to hear Carrie Lake. She's also a Republican nominee for the governorship. But in Arizona, when Tucker Carlson last night said to Carrie, hey, listen, they are now the governor of Florida is now dropping illegal immigrants off in Martha's Vineyard. Here's what she said. Cut 16.
You know, I get a kick out of it watching these liberal mayors just, you know, throw their hands up and say we can't handle it because it's life every day for us in these border states. However, I'm not a fan of it, Tucker. I mean, we're just taking people here illegally who shouldn't be here. We're moving them further inland. My plan is the most bold, aggressive plan on the border. We're going to secure the border. We're going to call it what it is, issue a declaration of invasion on day one, get troops on the border in the form of our National Guard. We're going to stop people from coming over. And we're going to stop the cartels from having control of our border.
Now, look, you don't have cartels on our border, on your border in New York. But what kind of substantive action could you take? Because this city, the city is a sanctuary city, which means you get here, you can stay, you cannot be deported.
You know, as I was listening to that clip, it's crazy that you have people who feel like this is their responsibility at the state level on the border. I mean, the fact that you even have this being discussed in the Arizona governor's race says a lot about the lack of leadership and action at the federal level. I mean, what we see in New York is that the biggest contributor is, one, lack of leadership and silence when flights are secretly coming in the middle of the night and bringing people illegally. The governor here doesn't say anything about it because she doesn't want to put any pressure on her fellow Democrat, President Biden. I, as governor, obviously wouldn't be hesitating during this process. It's not just about putting pressure to stop this Biden travel agency that provide the flights and provide the phones, but it's also about providing answers to New Yorkers who want to know who's coming, when they're coming, where are they going, what the cost is. There's just been so much secrecy, so that's another way to help. As you go through the state budget and what we just saw this past year is that they expanded Medicaid to provide additional taxpayer dollars to people who are illegally here. The year prior was a multi-billion-dollar excluded workers fund. I don't support either of that. The excluded workers fund is what they called it for people who are illegally in this country to be able to get a COVID response money, free money. So as far as the budget, I think that's the most important thing for the governor, the government in Albany to be able to do to tackle this. But I got to tell you, it pains me to hear an Arizona governor's race or a Texas governor's race where they feel like they have to propose doing it themselves. It shouldn't be on them.
So right now we're looking at the polls and we talked about this before. I'm not even sure what's on the air and off the air. But you feel like you got about 30% of New York City voters. You feel as though the upstate belongs to you and Long Island belongs to you. The question is by how much. Trafalgar did a poll, and they were remarkably accurate last time. And in the one in August, you were late all last week in August, Hochul by 5. And now it's even down even further. Where do you think this race is at right now?
I think it's good to look at it at about a mid-single-digit race at the moment. And that's a good place to be right now in the middle of September. At the end of the 1994 race between George Pataki against Mario Cuomo, last time New York State elected a new Republican governor, he was down. The last six public polls the last week of the election all had him down. Four of the six public polls had him down double digits. The average was 11.5 points. He won by 3.5, so the polls were 15 points off the week of the election. Now, we're running statewide. If you run for mayor of New York City, you have to win New York City. And the candidate on the Republican line won for mayor of New York City a whole bunch of times, beating the candidate on the Democrat line in recent history, right up until when Bill de Blasio got elected and started bringing everything down pretty quickly in New York City. What we need, as you pointed out, you mentioned that 30% number. If we get less than 29% of the vote in New York City, we can't win. If we get more than 35% of the vote in New York City, we can't lose. We have to work hard everywhere. So everyone in all 62 counties of the state, they can help by mining for every last possible friend, neighbor, person they know to get out and vote in this election coming up in you know, 7.5 weeks. Inside of New York City, if we don't get that 29% number, we're just not going to win. But what's kind of exciting is when you look at how important the issues are, especially of crime, number one, and the economy, and the amount of Democrats who every single day, prominent Democrats, day after day, are endorsing our campaign, sitting elected officials, former elected officials, Democratic community leaders. I feel like we should just go for that 35% and beyond number and win this race.
Well, who are the Democrats, Lee? Who are the Democrats that have supported you? I know Holden came out on Monday.
Yeah, so Robert Holden, a New York City councilman, sitting New York City councilman, endorsed us earlier this week. Steve Kaufman, former New York State Assemblyman. Dove Hyken, former New York State Assemblyman. Ruben Diaz, former New York State Senator, and until last year was a New York City councilman. Last night there was an op-ed that posted online at the New York Post of Andrew Stein, who's a former president of the New York City Council, Manhattan Borough President, and a state assemblyman. And then there was a bunch of community leaders as well. And we posted a video on our social media where people can watch individuals outside of government, but they run groups. And they're talking about how their entire lives, they've only voted Democrat. This is the first time in their entire life that they're voting Republican.
So you just got $1 million, I think half of which from a member of the Estee Lauder family. So that certainly will help you get on the offensive, but you're never going to be able to outraise Governor Hochul because there's such Democratic stalwarts here, correct?
That's right. We don't have – the good news is that we don't have to outraise her. And especially good news is because we're not going to outraise her. She's refusing to talk about the issues that matter most to New Yorkers. So she's blowing through a whole lot of extra money by trying to change the topic. And she'd rather talk about Trump than us over here talking about tackling rising crime and making it safe to be able to walk the streets. I mean, there are Democrats in New York City who used to be able to go take a stroll for 15 blocks on a beautiful Manhattan summer night. And instead, if they're going to blocks, they have to call an Uber. They used to ride the subway, but now they don't. And if they do, they're hugging a pole or grabbing a guardrail because they're afraid of being pushed in front of an oncoming subway car. So we won't have as much money as Kathy Hochul does, but as long as we're sitting here talking about the issues that matter most to New Yorkers and our solutions to fix it, it's all good, and we're going to win this race on November 8th.
So what happened with her in Buffalo and special interests that they say this is as big as the Buffalo Billion scandal that almost destroyed Cuomo?
Yeah, the secret process to get hundreds of millions of dollars, of taxpayer dollars, in order to get a new Buffalo Bills stadium. And I understand this desire to have a new Bills stadium, but you don't have to totally fleece the New York State taxpayer to do it. You can actually advocate for a good deal, you know, because yes, you might be a fan of a particular team. You're also the governor of the state. You have a duty to taxpayers, and she wasn't able to do both in being able to secure a deal that gets a new stadium and doesn't fleece the taxpayers. Every 30 days, she's been signing off on these COVID emergency powers. They just finally expired this week. She had one family donate $300,000 to her, and then that company that they own, they ended up getting an over $600 million COVID testing contract, no bid. It was all processed in one day, and the state is paying twice the price of the COVID test. So, $300,000 donation, $600 million in return.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's enough to destroy any campaign. The one thing's pretty clear. Her numbers aren't going to grow. In my opinion, doesn't have much charisma. Most of her constituencies upstate. She never knew Governor Cuomo. She was put there to help sew up us upstate. So your challenge would be to sell yourself to Democrats. I will say I was upstate all weekend going to various soccer games. I have two daughters who play college soccer. So I was at four different colleges. Every town has – I've never seen so many Zeldin signs or any sign outside Trump in my life. So upstate, they are ready for a change. Do you sense that?
Oh, big time. And listen, New York, people look at New York as a blue state. We have 62 counties. It's because of four counties, four of the five boroughs of New York City, Staten Island aside. That's the reason why people call it a blue state. If you took those four counties out on a given election, it's a red state. And the fact is that there are all 62 counties voting on the same day, and that's why we have to make sure we hit that vote goal of getting at least 29%. The reason why we don't have to win New York City, we just can't lose it by more than 40, is because of what you're seeing. And I'm seeing it as well when I travel around the state, all across the state. People want to end one-party rule. They want to fire Kathy Hochul. They're hitting their breaking point in the state. They're thinking about fleeing themselves. The state leads the entire nation in population loss, and they realize that Kathy Hochul is not going to do anything about it. She hasn't accepted any debate request yet. She's calling on me and people like me to leave the state, declaring that we're no longer New Yorkers. We're not welcome here anymore just because we challenge her. There's a whole lot of New Yorkers who resent this governor's entire approach to the job, realizing that she is not up to this task.
Well, they actually said that. You should go to Florida. You should, you and Donald Trump. I've never heard that before in my life. Now, I know the former president raised about $1 million for you. Where do you stand? I know you've been one of his staunchest supporters, but Glenn Youngkin said, yeah, I appreciate President Trump's support, but I'm running on my own. In a blue state like this, what's the role of President Trump?
We raised over $1 million. It was actually closer to $1.5 million at a great fundraiser that took place a couple weeks ago. And the funding is important to help get our message out. And what we're looking to do is to be the governor for all New Yorkers. And that includes people who like President Trump. They supported him. There are other people who didn't vote for him. They're not supporters of President Trump. I'm running as my own man to be the governor of the state of New York and to be the governor for all New Yorkers. And that's going to include a coalition of people who might have been the biggest supporters of President Trump and others who might not have been. And that's okay, because what's most important is making sure that life in New York is one where we can feel safe again in our streets, we can afford to pay our bills, we have a government that isn't attacking our
freedom. Congressman, real quick, I'm up against a break. But right now, the budget's so tight, the mayor has to cut 3% across the board on all agencies, including the NYPD. With the budget like this and under a minute left, how do you crack down on crime?
Well, we have to overhaul cashless bail. We need to fire rogue district attorneys like Alvin Bragg, who refuse to enforce the law. We need to get rid of the HALT Act because our corrections officers are under attack. We have to overhaul the parole board, releasing cop killers and murderers and rapists. We need those lax judges to be doing their job because they're releasing violent criminals on the streets. There's on our website, zeldinfornewyork.com/secureourstreets, a couple dozen or so proposals that directly answer your question.
Go get him. Congressman Lee Zeldin looking to pull off the upset of the year and shocking Governor Hochul. Thanks, Congressman. Best of
luck. Thanks, Brian.
You got it. Out in Suffolk County. He's won in a very purple area. Can he win in a blue state? This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Back with you in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I believe that journalism is extremely important. I've had a media credential in Chicago for over 10 years, Emmy Award winning, print, radio, TV. But Mayor Lightfoot is the least transparent mayor in our city's history. And sadly, for better or for worse, the reason my questions were so effective is because I was asking the questions that real Chicagoans wanted to hear, but they were hurting her reelection campaign, so she canceled my media credential.
Which is unbelievable, but that's William Kelly, Chicago reporter. Can you imagine that? Following a mayor around asking tough questions in a tough city like Chicago where crime is everywhere, and she didn't like him, so she steals his credential. Cut 18. More from William Kelly.
I think the real scandal here is that the Mayor Lightfoot has 80 plus security guards that are assigned to protect her from me asking her questions during a reelection campaign at a time when the Chicago police are down 1,500 officers. Crime is out of control. There's record low arrests and a spike in police suicides. It's my prayer that a federal judge will restore my media credential tomorrow so I can go back to Chicago City Hall and ask about the spike in police suicide.
I hope he does. I mean, can you imagine not being able to ask tough questions? Why even have a job? Hey, go to BrianKilmeade.com, order any of my books, you can get them signed. I can send them out, even personalize them, and find out how to see me in Tulsa and Brandon, Mississippi.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Yeah, that guy was Bobby Moynihan, and he plays me, a fat me, on SNL. So someone said to me, actually, was it Allison's idea for me to send him a book? And then evidently he was on Howard Stern's after show, and he was asked about, hey, you play Brian Kilmeade on SNL. He goes, yeah, he sent me a book. I'm not a fan.
So did you describe it with anything?
I don't think so. Maybe I just said... lose some weight. I don't know if I said anything like that, but I just, the main thing, they made me seem like a moron, which is okay, but it's just the whole 100 pounds overweight that's been under my skin.
I know, that was setting you off for weeks, just the weight aspect.
Dr. Oz is waiting online. I'm going to get to him in a second, one of the most exciting races in the country. Bottom of the hour, Tim Kennedy, one of our fiercest fighters, sniper, former UFC fighter, served in Afghanistan. Now he's with Save Our Allies. The change in tone and tactics have really paid off in the Ukraine. The Russians are on the retreat. Tim Kennedy was on the ground. I want to get his take on these new sign of events and maybe an assassination attempt on Vladimir Putin. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Setting the table for the midterm elections, we have some new Fox News polls out tonight. Voters are extremely concerned about inflation at 59%. The state of democracy at 50%. You see abortion ticking up there, but at 45% and crime at 43%.
Yeah, big change. Primary is complete. Matchups are set. Latest on all the races. And what's going to decide the party in power and the issues that matter most.
Number two.
With Governor DeSantis actually delivering them to Martha's Vineyard, we're going to see a whole new awareness on a sanctuary state where all of a sudden this open border kind of mentality is coming home to roost.
Mark Meadows talking about the border crisis. It's been horrific. A reality show for Arizona and Texas. But now it's for Chicago, New York, Washington, D.C., and Martha's Vineyard. Plane loads arriving in that luxury city, which pretty hard to get to, not if you're an illegal. Also, the VP's residence. How do you feel about those tactics?
Number one.
Now we're choosing to build a better America. An America that's confronting the climate crisis with America's workers leading the way. We're rebuilding an economy, a clean energy economy.
Really? On whose back? Energy and the economy. While the president brags about his climate bill and demos electric cars, what about all those losing jobs that don't make electric cars? Our economy's being driven off a cliff. And I want to bring that to Dr. Oz. Dr. Oz got this broad background. Because of success in syndicated television, he's got this great sense of international business. A self-made surgeon who is, by all accounts, one of the best in the business, and then has one of the most successful syndicated shows in television, and said, you know what? I'm going to try something else. I'm going to try to get that Senate seat in Pennsylvania. After a rugged primary run against Dave McCormick, very formidable, he prevails, now trailing by about 4 points, according to most of the polls, to a guy coming off a stroke, 6'6", former Lieutenant Governor Fetterman. Joining me now, Dr. Oz. Dr. Oz, welcome back.
Thank you very much. And I think you hit the nail on the head with that initial point. People are concerned about the economy, specifically taxes and cost of food. And they are really upset about crime in my commonwealth, my Pennsylvania, because they've got the highest murder rates ever in our history in Philadelphia. And since you mentioned Fetterman, you know, he thinks he's above the people, he's above the law. He backed massive middle-class tax hikes, but did not pay his own 67 times. You heard right. 67 liens because he didn't pay his taxes, but he's very happy to jack up taxes on folks who don't have much. The middle class is really getting hurt.
So no one really talks about that. They just talk about how he's an everyman candidate, wearing a hoodie, getting kind of big crowds. He was a pundit on MSNBC and then decides to throw his hat in the ring. But if you look at his background, he's more Bernie Sanders than he is a moderate.
Well, without question, he's much, much further to the left of Joe Biden. You know, he's said all kinds of reprehensible things about Biden not being liberal enough. And before you say he has big crowds, he doesn't do any events. I mean, the man has spoken for less than half an hour the entire campaign. Add up all the talks he gives together. He doesn't talk enough. He's having trouble, obviously, because he had a stroke, and I have tremendous empathy for that. But I've been pushing him and squeezing him to do a debate, and we're, you know, getting closer. But, I mean, it's just remarkable that he doesn't think he has to answer any questions. And this is an issue for democracy to cope with. Can you imagine having to vote for a person who has not answered a single question on the campaign trail from a reporter, not answered a single voter's question on the campaign trail, and hasn't talked to me or answered any of my questions because he won't debate me? And these are the kinds of changes to how the Democrats are running candidates that really are bothersome, because you can manufacture a candidate on television commercials. You make the person seem like they're the ideal candidate for America, but they're a facade. They're fiction. They're not real. They're comic book.
John Fetterman speaking Sunday. He did have an event over the weekend. Here's what he said Sunday about you. Cut 21.
I truly hope for each and every one of you. You didn't have a doctor in your life making fun of it, making light of it, or telling you that you're not fit to be served. No? But unfortunately, I do.
You making fun of him?
Of course not. I've said, like I just did with you, when I speak about John Fetterman, I have empathy for his condition. I've dealt with heart failure. I've dealt with strokes with my patients. I know how difficult it is for what he's going through. My argument is completely different. I'm saying, either you're healthy enough to debate, and you say you are, so then debate. Otherwise, I'm going to assume you're trying to hide your radical record from us, or you're lying about your health. Either way, we got a problem here. But it's not fair to the voters of Pennsylvania. It's dismissive of them for you not to think you have to answer any questions. And I just mentioned the fact that he's got, you know, 67 liens for not paying his taxes. But this is a man who wanted to release one-third of all prisoners in Pennsylvania, did his best on the parole board to free convicted murderers with life sentences over the objections of the other parole board members. In the meantime, violent crime skyrocketed in the town where he had been mayor. It's skyrocketing in Pennsylvania, and people are upset about it. Doesn't he have to answer for why these policies don't work? And his argument is, I tweeted it out. It sounded cool. People liked it. I don't have to defend my policies. And I say, in America, you do. I have positions that I take. I defend them every day. I've done 200 campaign events. He's done half a dozen. I mean, it doesn't make sense that he would think that is what campaigning is about. But I'm not surprised, because he doesn't like to show up for things. He doesn't show up for his work. He hasn't gone to his job as lieutenant governor. He didn't show up for his mayor meetings. People don't like him for that reason. And yet he thinks he should get promoted for not doing his job. In America, you should have to work to earn your promotion.
So I want you to hear what else he said he would do a couple of Sundays ago. Cut 22.
Who wants me to be the 51st vote? Do you know what I would do if I was that 51st vote? First, rid of the filibuster. Right next, codify Roe.
So, I mean, that's what he believes that he would do first. And I think that anyone who wants to get rid of the filibuster, if you're a Democrat, is nuts. Because 2 years later, it's overwhelming that Republicans are going to take the Senate. And there's an excellent chance they're Republican to win the White House. Do they want to make the same mistake again?
They have not learned from the mistakes they made around the Supreme Court when Harry Reid did this, you know, 8 years ago. He has very little desire to compromise. He said, if you like Joe Manchin, don't vote for me. He won't even work with people in his own party, Ryan. This is the radical person that Pennsylvania is considering sending to the Senate, and I'm going to stop. Because if he busts the filibuster, if he packs the Supreme Court, if he's able to get more states added, it hurts this country in ways that are not easy to fix. And it is imperative, especially if you're going to put someone in a job, that they're willing to work hard at it and do their homework and be thoughtful about their decisions. That is not John Fetterman's pathway. He's done all kinds of unhinged things in his life. But he is the darling of the liberals on the coast. His money, and he's getting a gargantuan amount, which is why this is such a tight race. He is getting supported by people who don't know his radical policies. That's why I ask, if you're concerned, and you should be, go to DrOz.com. Republicans are not donating as much as Democrats are. In fairness, we don't need as much money because we're better candidates. It takes a lot of money to sell something you don't have. But folks need to go to DrOz.com and keep me close to him financially. Otherwise, they tell a fairy tale in their commercials, and we have to call them out on it. If I can define John Fetterman as someone who thinks he's above the people and the law, as someone who cares about criminals over the innocent, I win this election. It's that simple. So please consider supporting me.
Dr. Oz, a couple of things. If I was to suffer a stroke, and I'm kind of against it, I hope it doesn't happen. I have the most supportive management, but I wouldn't. And if I was unable to talk, I would not be able to keep this job. And if you were, you wouldn't be able to stay on your talk show, and I wouldn't be able to keep Fox and Friends. It just would be flat out. Brian, as you get better, come back. And that would be fact. You might say it's cruel, but it's a fact, because people are paying to get information from me or my opinion. If I can elaborate on that, I can't do my job. It doesn't mean people that have to tell me to take some time off to recover are bad people. Is that how you feel? You don't have anything against them. But if you can't do the job, it's important to point that out.
Many have raised this issue, and I don't even have to, because even the liberal media is arguing what you just said, because they don't want someone who's—
The Washington Post. The Washington Post came out and said you got to debate at least twice.
And debate early. Don't try to stall till the last day. And I'm skeptical he'll show up. It worries me that he wouldn't ever be put on the spot by me, voters, or by the press. But here's the deeper truth. He hasn't told us anything. If you did have a stroke, Brian, you'd probably share your medical records or enough information to educate folks making the decision with you. He hasn't shared any of the real information we would need to know in order to decide if he's capable, and he doesn't intend to, and he needs to be called out for that. That's an element of transparency that all of us deserve to vote for a seat in the U.S. Senate.
Well, the thing is, there's so much early voting, so he is waiting to the last minute. It'll be October 25th in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. It'll be on Nextdoor, hosted by Nextdoor Television. We understand we'll be live on local network affiliates who cover all 67 counties. He has some things that he wants done. He says a moderator must explain to the audience that Fetterman is using a closed caption system during the debate to explain any delay between him being asked a question and responding. And the questions asked by any Nextdoor employee during the practice session for Fetterman bear zero resemblance to the actual questions during the debate. I guess he needs a practice session because of the electronics?
He needs several practice sessions. That's what he's asked for. Again, I empathize. I said, yes, take your practice sessions. Then he said, I need closed captioning so I can actually see the words written. He has trouble, I'm told, we haven't seen the records, but he has trouble processing words. So he doesn't put the words together when he hears them. He can maybe read them and make more sense of what these words are. And by the way, there's no closed captioning on the Senate floor, the greatest deliberative body in America. You don't get to have closed captioning. So these are issues that he'll have to work through if he is elected. But the biggest concern now is he doesn't want to do it till very late, and he wants a very short debate. Well, if you're only going to do one, which, as you point out, the Washington Post argues you must do several, if you're going to do it so late that the absentee ballots are already returned, which could be 25% of all the ballots, you're cheating the voters. You're dodging the debate. And I'm saying, well, then at least debate me make up the time that you're wasting with the closed captioning where you have to read the questions and process them and then slowly answer them. Let at least go to 90 minutes. And they're arguing that. Again, they're not serious about debating. They don't want the debate. They're trying to avoid it. And we have to hold them accountable. So if you're a listener right now, tell your friends in Pennsylvania, go to DrOz.com, support us. But you must get vocal. This is a national implication race.
And that'll be, so you want it from 60 to 90 minutes. And do you have a moderator picked out?
I don't have the moderator, but Nextdoor is a strong system. I agreed to 7 debates, you should know. I agreed to 7 large media debates from the big companies that often do them. He's only accepted this one so far. I think with more pressure, maybe he'll, he only accepted this one because literally there was a chorus from every media outlet. As you point out, from the Washington Post to Fox News and everyone in between was crying for some degree of integrity here. At least let us hear you speak once about your issues. Let someone ask you one set of questions. And I'm arguing that these should be the same number of questions you would normally have in a debate. So at least there's one fair chance. I wish there were more, but you know, he's pretty, you know, he's very evasive, very dodgy, doesn't show up, doesn't answer requests, and doesn't answer questions. So it's a weird campaign.
Yeah, it's definitely making it a little bit difficult for you. I mean, the positive thing is that he's so different than you would think Pennsylvania is, being that he's way to the left. The negative thing is, because of his health issues or whatever, he does not want to debate you. So it's hard to go at somebody who's just attacking you through staffers and social media. I mean, they say that you are making fun of him, which I don't think that you have that in your system. But the attacks that have come through social media have been pretty cutting on you.
Without question, they're fighting an ugly battle. They started it. They have been trolling people for years. You know me. I've joined you countless times on the show and Fox and Friends. It's not my personality to make fun or belittle people. I want to argue the issues, and that's why he's in a panic. Their lead is evaporated because all he talks about are ad hominem attacks on me. But if you're a mom struggling to put food on the table for your kids, and if you're struggling as a business owner to get past these ridiculous regulations, if you're worried that crime is skyrocketing in your community, Fetterman making fun of Oz doesn't help that. I'm actually specifically addressing these issues. I got the unanimous endorsement by the Fraternal Order of Police because they're so upset at how Fetterman undermines them. I know that we can improve our city street safety and reduce fentanyl deaths, which are skyrocketing in Pennsylvania. We're number three in the country if we close the border, but right, allow legal immigration. And I also know that if we allow energy production to continue in Pennsylvania, we'll drop inflation for the entire country.
Yeah, if you guys got to frack again, you're up. You're trailing by 5, according to CBS, by double figures, according to Monmouth. But the fight has just begun. I know Dave McCormick is now in your corner. Pat Toomey strongly there. And we know the president, a former president, has always been there. Best of luck, Dr. Oz.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back. I'll try to get to the phone calls right now as we continue to see events now. The president taking a bow for ending the railroad strike. I didn't even know it was happening until the other day. Let's go to Howard in Ocean Grove, New Jersey.
Hi, Brian. Just a couple comments regarding Dobbs and abortion, and then would like to know what you think about it. This would have been a great time for the Chief Justice to have crafted a compromise for now and not let this issue come to the forefront. But I guess that's where it is at the moment. It's my belief that the Republican candidates should all start with what my opponent is not telling you and then go through the litany of horrible things that occur as post-abortion and up to the last minute and all the rest of all that. And just a last comment on all that. I think it's very lame, and it doesn't help when they say it's going back to the states. That's not going to convince anybody, particularly people that are just not really aware of everything and believe all this stuff that abortion is not available anymore. Wonder what you think.
Well, I just think back to the states makes sense because it's accurate. Number two, the Chief Justice had a chance to craft a compromise, could not get it. So there you have it. The Republicans should be ready to answer the question. Like Marco Rubio did. He says, I'm pro-life. I like 0 weeks, but the people of Florida don't. They want 15 weeks, and that's where they'll probably stay, especially if you're a Senate candidate. It's not really going to affect you if it's a Senate candidate. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Brian Kilmeade Show, back with Tim Kennedy in a moment. Talk war.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
What's happened here is that, to the credit of the administration, they seem to be all in making sure that the sophisticated weapons that Ukraine needs to win on the battlefield is going. On the sanctions front, they've been great. We're trying to put another tool in the toolbox. So the way I look at this is that the combined effect of what Congress has done and what the administration has done is leading to outcomes nobody could imagine when this thing first started.
That is Senator Lindsey Graham, but also pointing out, too, that they didn't get it there fast enough, wasn't there before the invasion happened, even though they predicted it would take place. And they, so far, we still have held back on certain things that could permanently shift the tide. But the last time I talked to my next guest, things look pretty grim for the Ukrainians. And he was over there himself. He was also at the airport when the explosion happened at Abbey Gate. and has fought for this country over the course of years as a sniper and served in Afghanistan. Now with Save Our Allies, his book is now out. Tim Kennedy joins us now. Hey, Tim, welcome back. What do you say now about things happening on the ground? Do the Ukrainians have a reason to be optimistic?
I mean, hope and optimism is something that you have to have on the battlefield, regardless of how things are going. But how things are going, there is a reason for hope. As we're moving into fall, as winter is right here on the horizon, how many times have they said it? All the way back to Genghis Khan about fighting the Russians in the winter. We're on the precipice of what I think is going to be one of the worst humanitarian crises in modern day history, which is going to be Eastern Europe this winter. And if they don't get ground, if they don't get power plants back up and running, if we don't get gas flowing, if we're not able to maintain the control of that harbor, that bay, then we're talking mm-hmm. about some dire situations coming up.
So 3,000 square miles roughly have been gained back. We see Russians are changing their uniforms into civilian clothes and running. They have evidently picked up so much Russian hardware between tanks and personnel carriers and guns while they move forward. And now there's a thought that Kherson, they might have to move troops over to help stop the advancement, freeing things up in the south. But you've been on the ground. I mean, the Ukrainians seem organized. Their intelligence seems great. The HIMARS seem to be working. There seems to be even Russian television being critical of Russian military. So, I mean, these are some of the things I never would have predicted, correct?
Yeah, you're not wrong at all. When the invasion started and the efficiency, the effectiveness, I mean, almost similar to, Germany's Blitz campaign back in World War II, where they're just taking ground. We see them all the way into the capital of Kyiv and past and beyond, and even like the North and South Crescents, almost reaching down to the Sea of Azov, and obviously the invasion coming from Belarus, that being a proxy, a safe haven, a lily pad for the military forces of Russia. I'm dumbfounded as to the strategy of Russia. And, unless they want a prolonged war and, that is a battle of attrition that they're very able to win. Even though we see ground being taken, we have an amazing team on the ground. Save Our Allies is doing great humanitarian work. Our expeditionary forces there are really, really trying to do good. And there's so much good that has to be done there. It's horrible. I mean, it is horrific, the violence and the civilian populace that has had to absorb the collateral damage that's come from the ineffectiveness of the Russian troops. Even though we've gained ground, the Ukraine's when I say we, man, I am not a fan of communism, and boy, am I not a fan of the Putin military invasion of a sovereign nation. So there should be some solidarity in wanting to fight communism on every single front, which is why I say we. And, the Save Our Allies trying to do good there. But, man, there's so much more that has to be done.
Tim Kennedy, our guest, his book is Scars and Stripes. It's out. You got to go pick it up. So I understand this. Vladimir Putin's limousine was hit by a loud bang in a possible attack. He was evidently in a decoy contingent, at which time, according to Telegram, which I think they communicate a lot on, the head of his security has now been arrested. A narrow circle of people that knew his movement have already been detained. So this, to me, looks like there was a assassination attempt on Vladimir Putin. Between that and the broadcast on his friendly broadcast network that are condemning some of his tactics and the promises as opposed to what's been delivered, I mean, as he goes to meet with President Xi, he's got to be shook to his core to a degree.
I mean, I hope so. He's been in power for a long time, and he's only gained power. Arguably, some people say he's one of the pre-invasion sanctions oligarchs, kind of being capped to a degree, was one of the richest men on the planet, with money being hidden in millions of different entities and organizations all over the planet. And if we think for a second that the strong grip of the radical ideas of communism have been shaken, they haven't. They are still rooted in, obviously, China, and Russia still is in Ukraine. So until they have been pushed back into their proper sovereign borders until, you know, they secede ground that is not rightfully theirs. I love hope, but I know that we still have a lot of work to do. And I think it's very, very premature for anyone to start making any victory assertions or, you know, say that he is in a dangerous position. He's not. He's still very, very dangerous.
Politico's reporting Vladimir Putin admitted to China in their meeting that China has questions and concerns about Ukraine. So maybe they're getting the message that taking Taiwan might be a lot harder than it looks from the outside. And once war starts, you really have no control of the narrative. How could Vladimir Putin, at the very least, have miscalculated so precipitously as he did, thinking he'll take Kyiv, put in a new government, and be done with it? How could he be so wrong?
I mean, that's the arrogance of a dictator. They thought the Russian troops truly believed that they would be welcomed as liberators. You know, they had been so the propaganda machine that is Russia, you know, for generations. They've been saying that Ukraine is actually their ground. You know, like Moscow was built by Kyiv engineers and architects. So like it's in truth the other way around. A lot of Russia truly belongs to Ukraine. If you go back in history long enough. But in their pompous position and believing the propaganda, their own lies, they just started believing them. In that confirmation bias, they had this assumption that they would cross the border, they would be welcomed like liberators, and every single one of those Ukrainian eastern cities all the way to Kyiv would be like, oh, finally, Russia's here. Man, what they forgot is the Ukrainians are fierce, strong people that are proud of their heritage and proud of having, you know, the sanctity that is their own country, their own entity, and you know, it is that the pompous ignorance and the pompous belief of a dictator that they are truly the solution to the world. And these narcissists, and there's a few of them, are dangerous. And finally, a few of them got to see what happens when they get to see the real world. And there's somebody on the other side of that barrel that's saying, no, you have crossed our sovereign border. Good luck taking another inch because you're going to have to step over my dead body in a pile of brass.
Tim, are they capable of going doing some guerrilla warfare behind enemy lines? We saw about those 9 planes that were brought up. We saw an assassination attempt inside Moscow. Would that be one way to continue to demoralize that unit? Do you think that the Ukrainians could do that and are doing it?
All right. We have brushed one of my favorite topics in the world, which is what Green Berets have been built to do all the way back to Vietnam, which is, you know, training guerrilla warfare, insurgencies. And, you know, for the past few wars, we've been fighting, you know, we've been counterinsurgencies. We've been fighting the insurgencies that were the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, Hamas. But what we're getting to see here is the script being flipped. And, you know, your question, it's a very insightful one. Are they capable? They have been training to do this for generations. There were horrible articles that were calling some of the Ukrainian high schools fascists, that were they're training these young men to be fascists. In truth, what was happening is all of those young men were being trained and prepared to have to fight against a communist invasion force. And they've been doing it for a generation. And now we got to see what that looks like. When truly somebody gets to stand up and say, no, you don't get to have this ground. This is our ground. And a matter of fact, we're going to fight every tooth and nail, every way imaginable, and then we're going to push back. We're going to push back not just to our borders, but into your borders. And that is what is truly dangerous about an insurgency, is when the belief, when we call it the center of gravity, when the center of gravity is so unifying that you cannot topple that until you topple that belief. And their belief is that Ukraine is ours, and Russia has no chance in toppling that.
And to my last question, a lot of people say we shouldn't be involved helping writing checks. I firmly believe, but you live war and you've been in war. I study it. I really believe Georgia would be next, Moldova, and then they start replacing the Baltic, try to replace the Baltic nations with their own stooges. And this would be something we'd be dealing with for the last 20 years unless they're stopped there. Do you think that that's a premise that they were hoping to pull off?
That's exactly my beliefs. Do I want American taxpayer dollars to be being pumped into, you know, Ukrainian oligarchs or any criminal entities? Absolutely not. You know, like, I'm a staunch libertarian, a constitutionalist, but man, I do not like communism. And I would even argue that they would push to all the original borders of the USSR. You know, like the Czech, obviously Poland would be next. Czech Republic would be on the door. You know, and when you think about that, like, they went all the way to Kyiv, and they were looking at Poland next. You know, Krakow was on their radar. You know, they're looking all the way to Prague and Czech Republic. We have Poland, which is now the number two Apache owner on the planet, the Apache, the helicopter designed to fight tanks, which, you know, the artillery and the mechanized units of the Russian military being really their best force. The rest of Eastern Europe took notice. It's a shame that American people have not taken notice to understand the ramifications and the second and third order effects of what would happen in Europe if Russia would be successful in Ukraine.
I see it, and I'm heartened by the fact that you've witnessed it and are back to report on it. Pick up Tim's book to talk about what he's been through and where he's going. It's called Scars and Stripes, an unapologetically American story of fighting the Taliban, UFC warriors, and myself. Not me, but you. Tim, thanks. Always great to talk to you.
Yes, sir. Pleasure's mine.
All right. Back in a moment.
The fastest growing talk show in America. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Mr. President, thank you for unifying and inspiring a vision of a stronger, fairer, safer future for all, for our children. Your extraordinary leadership has made this glorious day possible. That's an applause line.
Isn't that great?
Please.
And that was part of the disaster, which was 2 days ago at the White House. Many people think that Lindsey Graham saved the news cycle for Democrats because he came out saying, I'm going to pass a law if we get control of the Senate. I'm going to offer it. To put a national legislation at 15 weeks. Okay. I don't know if he stole the cycle. What he's trying to do is take the most difficult issue for Republicans and knock it out of the way and say, this is where we stand. I think 80% of Republicans are pro-life, and the ones that are pro-choice can deliver with 50 weeks. What you're doing is you're getting people who are moderate in the middle or to the left motivated to go vote. So that'll be a challenge. But I don't think it's as big a challenge as everyone says. I'm not sure. It doesn't seem as though that Lindsey Graham really helped too many people on the right, even though he intended to. William, listening in South Bend, WTRC. Hey, William.
Hey, thanks, Brian, for taking my call. You know, you were talking to Dr. Oz, and I was listening to Hannity the other night, and he's talked about during the previous election that the Mammoth poll came out and said that, you know, that Trump had no way to win. He was down in the polls, and everything that they had, all their data showed that Biden was way ahead. And I think it really had an impact on the way that people were going out and voting, because people were going, well, it's already a lost cause. Why go ahead and do this? After the election, they came out and they said, oh, our data was all wrong. The polling was incorrect.
Yeah.
He wasn't ahead, and so on and so forth. So when they're talking about Oz, then I saw the other morning, I listen to you. I watch you guys every morning.
Thank you.
And then listen to you, obviously, on the radio as I am now. And so my wife will quite often put on CNBC. So, and I'm like, and I walk in the other room and I see this, and they're talking about, oh, well, yeah, it's Dr. Oz is 7 points behind. And I'm like, you know what? I just heard this last night. I could swear it's probably doing the same thing, that marketing strategy to tell people, well, he's already lost. He's 7 points behind. It's only going to get worse. So there's no sense in going out and doing this. Locally here in South Bend, years ago, there was a guy that was running for a judge. And he was a shoo-in. He was given a shoo-in. It came out 2 weeks before the election that he had 70-some parking violations that he never paid. And it came out, and they said, oh, well, he must think he's above the law. But yet he's running for a judge. And the guy ended up losing. And I'm like, well, that's the type of truly, that's the kind of result that you would want to have. If somebody's, and when you talk about who Oz is running against, the guy has, what, 29 infractions of not paying his taxes?
Yeah, 60. I mean, it's unbelievable. But I would say this. I'm guilty of this, William. Is that I started looking at the polls again, too, as if I have short-term memory loss when I realized how inaccurate they are. I mean, remember, Senator Collins was not supposed to be close in Maine. She won handily. Joni Ernst was going to lose in Iowa, wasn't even close. Remember, the House was supposed to be, they were supposed to widen the margin of the House. They came within 5 seats of taking out the House last election. And then if it wasn't for President Trump playing a role, in my view, of blowing those two Georgia seats, the Republicans would have left, would have held on to the Senate. And the president, whatever you want to say about President Trump, got 74 million votes, the most in Republican history, I believe, ever. So at 74 million, considering all the scandal and two impeachments and everything else that happened, you know, between the Moscow, between the Russian hoax and the impeachment, considering that he almost won again, it's hard to believe that I'm still looking at the polls. But I dismiss Monmouth almost right away. And I would say Trafalgar's been a little, leans a little right, it seems, but it's much more accurate. I listen to Pennsylvania. I look at Pennsylvania. I've been there a million times, mostly through soccer tournaments and just travel. We've got great stations over there. And I don't see anybody going for a left-wing representative at a local level, maybe in Philadelphia, certain areas, or certainly at a statewide level. If you're way to the left, what are you doing in Pennsylvania? I mean, there's plenty of states for you, but not in Pennsylvania. And that's what Fetterman is. I can't believe he's actually using a stroke to his advantage. I mean, does he really need all these things to happen for him to debate? He needs closed caption. He needs more time to digest what he reads. How is he going to sit there and read a piece of complicated legislation? I mean, how is he going to even look at some of these bills that are passed and even have a chance at understanding them? Unless all you know is I'm against fracking. I'm for legalizing marijuana. I'm for zero cash bail. I'm going to think criminal first, and you don't need to know much detail about that. I'm just astounded. I knew that Dr. Oz and Dave McCormick were a good matchup. And if Dr. Oz won against Pat Toomey, it's a pretty good matchup. You got a high-profile guy against, but they're both very conservative, not total, not 100% conservative, but very conservative, you know, not conservative like, let's say, Ted Cruz. But in Pennsylvania, there needs to be somebody in the moderate. I think someone way to the right is also not going to be successful in Pennsylvania. That's why I thought that Dr. Oz would have a much easier time generally than he would in the primary. If he ends up walking away with this, never believe another poll. J.D. Vance, they have neck and neck with Tim Ryan. I think people of Ohio are smarter than that. Tim Ryan is not a moderate. I thought he was, but he's not.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.